Transportation Committee will come to order. Members, we have six bills on the agenda today, and we're going to have to hop around. It's deadline week. We've got authors chairing other committees, presenting bills in other committees. First off, we're going to take number two on the agenda, Senator Torres Reyes, Senate File 2690. Senator Torres Reyes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. Senate File 2690 is a human services bill related to foster care, but there is a provision in the bill, actually three provisions relating to driver's license, and I am here to present these to you to ask for your support on those provisions. And they are Section 1, Subdivision 1, allowing the approval for an application of driver's license. Section 2, Subdivision 2, the same thing relating to instruction permit. And Section 3, Subdivision 1, allowing approval on application for a provisional license. And, Mr. Chair and members, this is really an attempt to help children that do not live with their parents at the time that they are learning to drive. So they are in a foster home or they are in a transitional living program, and they need a person that is responsible for their care actually needs to sign on this. And so we're moving in that direction to make sure that these children learn to drive and that we support them in that process. But at that time in their lives, they do not live with their parents. So it's a very simple provision, and technically we are supposed to bring it to your attention so that you know that we're moving in this direction.
Well, thank you, Senator Torres Ray. Why don't we take, is it Ms. Reagan? Why don't we take your testimony and get it on the record, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mary Regan. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Council of Child Caring Agencies, but I'm also here today representing the Youth Moving Forward Coalition, which is a coalition of providers and advocates working to support youth who are aging out of foster care. This provision was actually brought to us by young people. We did some focus groups a couple of years ago, and they brought us this provision as an example of something that would help them as we expect them to develop independent living skills. In your packets, you should have copies of letters from some of those young people asking for your support for this provision. So I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Reagan. Are there questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Watt.
Thank you. Senator Torres Reyes or Ms. Reagan, how does the liability insurance work?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, up until the point that a child actually gets their driver's license, there's no requirement that they have specific insurance. The insurance is on the car. It is only after getting the license and if they're going to be driving the car that they need to be added to the policy, and that decision would be made independently by each foster family. If they wanted that child to be able to drive, then they would need to add that child to their insurance policy on their car.
Mr. Chair, when the time is appropriate, I'd like to move the bill.
All right. Further questions? Is there anybody in opposition to the bill? We haven't heard of anybody. This is a good bill, Senator Torres Reyes. And Senator Moi would move that Senate File 2690 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
That's correct. Okay.
Okay. On the Moi motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Torres Reyes and Ms. Reagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Next, we're going to take a couple of Senator Scoey's bills, Senate File 2884 and Senate File 2846. Senator Scoey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to make a motion to table 2884, but I want to make a few comments to the committee first. What's happening in the agriculture area with regard to anhydrous is that there have been a lot of regulations and new enforcement going on with regard to this nitrogen fertilizer. that is causing a lot of the fertilizer facilities to not handle it anymore. The reason that that's an issue is that instead of these tanks being traveled a relatively short distance to the, from the local elevator to the farm, some farms up in my neck of the woods now have to travel 50 and 60 miles. So are we really making ourselves safer by having this great of distance being traveled with these tanks? The other thing that I wanted to talk about is this bill really just dealt with whether the Highway Patrol would have the ability to issue out-of-service orders in the elevator's yard as they do this inspection. Currently, these tanks are inspected by the Department of Ag and by the Highway Patrol. And I think that in this age of scarce resources, we are going to not have the luxury of having duplicative services. And so through this summer and fall, I think that there's going to be some efforts to figure out who should be inspecting these tanks, what the jurisdiction is, and not have both the Department of Ag and the Highway Patrol doing inspections on the trailer and the tank. And the third comment that I have has to do with the fiscal note. And I have to tell you, committee, I'm really tired of every time that you draft a bill, we get a fiscal note that says the Federal Department of Transportation is going to take our money if we make some slight little change in the state of Minnesota, because it just can't be on everything that way. But having said that, Mr. Chair, I would move that we table Senate File 2884.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. And before we vote on that motion, is there anybody here that wants to try to explain this fiscal note? Anybody from finance?
Well,
Senator Skoy?
Mr. Chair, I had discussions with the department yesterday with regard. I had Captain Urquhart and Major, can't pronounce your last name, Pell, whatever, in my office. We had a lot of discussion, yeah. And what they tell me is that they feel that they have the obligation to do these inspections off the road and that the federal government's going to withhold money. But I think we need to, as a committee, get our arms around some of these fiscal costs and whether they're actually there or if they're just using them as leverage on us.
Senator Skoy, I feel the same way you do. You know, we're trying to get rid of some of the permits and tags that a lot of people who deal in the transportation area, whether it's anhydrous ammonia or, you know, cardboard, because there's so much duplicity between us and the federal government, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, a lot of these outfits are being charged twice to do the same thing, and it just doesn't make any sense. So. With that said, on the Skoy motion to table Senate File 2884, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is tabled. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here with Senate File 2846. Joining me is Mr. Culverson, and he's going to help me as we go through what I think is primarily a technical bill. Over the last couple of years, we've been making an effort to bring these implements of husbandry language into one section of law, and this is a continuation of that effort. There is one thing in here that is not technical. Currently, we have two types of permits for oversized loads. One's a $24 permit that has less, is more restrictive, and one's a $120 permit, which has more flexibility with regard to the size of the load. Mr. Halverson, I'm sure, is able to give you much more detail on that. What we are doing here is eliminating the $24 permit and asking all of these oversized permits to be at the larger one and the $120 number. And that, so that is obviously not a technical change, but I think the rest of the bill is pretty technical. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chair, members, Gene Halverson from MnDOT. The $24 permit, what we're trying to do there is the same as we did last year. We had three bail permits, and we moved them into one. Here we had two implement a husbandry permits, farm machinery permits, and we want to move them into one. The $24 one's been there since 1980. The fee has not increased. It has some limited dimensions. The $120 one gives increased dimensions. Late Friday afternoon, I had contact again with Rich Strom from the Implement Dealers Association, and he said his members are okay with it. I think it's because of the increased dimensions, even though there is an increase in the fee. $120 is an annual fee and allows them to make as many trips as they want in a year's time. So for many of them, it gets down to a matter of a couple dollars per trip. So that's the reason for that increase in the fee.
No, do we have an amendment?
We did ask.
Senator Scoy, you do have the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy offers up the A1 amendment. This is a delete all amendment, and I think it's been passed out, folks, on that
it's
motion.
Not a, it's not a delete all.
No.
I'm sorry, it's not a delete all.
And Mr. Chair, this amendment, while it's quite large, it primarily is just changing the current statute from 169.822 to changing that to 169.823. And wherever that occurs in there, we're making that change. Maybe Mr. Halverson should speak to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, the change from getting rid of 169.822 and putting in its place 823, some years ago, the statute changed. 822 does not speak to weights. It only talks about definitions. And therefore, the weights now occur in 169.823, the tire weights, and not in 822. And so that's wherever 822, the range 822 to 829 appeared in there. We're crossing out 822 and replacing it with 823 to make it reflect the current statute. There's another section in there in 169.824. In a three-axle vehicle, it shows a gross weight of 37,000 for a 7-foot spread and 38.5 for an 8-foot spread. And that should, in the chart, reflect 34,000. And then at the end of the chart, it reflects those two weights for trucks that were manufactured prior to August 1, 1991. So all it's doing is trying to make the chart clearer. It's not changing any weights for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. On another matter, on channel on page 5, about the height of trucks, are bridges higher in greater Minnesota than in the metro?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, yes, that's
really?
The case.
Wow.
What happened last year is when we combined the three bail permits, we cut back to 14.6 because we were now allowing transportation on the interstate. We do have 116 bridges in the 7-county metro area that will not accommodate 15 feet. And I have to tell you that the 15 feet, we actually operate in permits with a six-inch cushion. So some of those bridges might be over 15, but they don't give us the 6-inch cushion. So a person called me this past week and said that he's always operated at 14.8, and now all of a sudden he was reduced to 14.6, and he got stopped at a scale, didn't get a ticket, got a warning. So in order to fix that, that's what this amendment's about. So it would allow 15 in the outstate area and 14.6 in the metro to accommodate those lower bridges.
I always learn something, Mr. Chair, when I come to Transportation Committee.
Yeah, there's always a little something to be learned. So thank you, Mr. Halverson. On the SCOI motion to amend with the A1 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator SCOI.
If there are no further questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gimsey.
I'd just like to go back to this deleting the $24 annual permit and
instituting the 120 or shifting those over. Can you tell us how many individual permits there are that are at that $24 level and how many are at the 120?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gimsey, because they're permits and, you know, people call in and buy them, we never know exactly how many we're going to issue in a year. But based on 2009 numbers, we issued approximately 245 $24 ones. So that's an increase of $96 times 245 is roughly $22,000 increase. That will take in an increase of 22.
Mr. Chair, can you tell me then how many currently at that 120 permit range?
Best of my recollection, it's just over 1,000.
Okay, so it's so what we're doing is not taking a large group of people who are currently paying only $24 and shifting them into this higher permit fee area then.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's correct.
Yeah, thank you.
And Mr. Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gimsey, I too had questions about this. And after a discussion with the department and the flexibility that is afforded to these permittees with the larger permit, and when you take the, you know, it's a full year and $120, you know, it's $10 a month, and you know, so they can haul a lot of loads. It's a pretty nominal cost per load when you start calculating it out. The other thing is I haven't heard from anybody in opposition. No, I haven't gone out looking for opposition either, but usually if the, you know, the implement dealers are, they, you know, they would have let me know if they were opposed to this. I don't know if Mr. Halverson has had conversations with them or not.
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, yes. I did call them when this bill first came out, and they did express their executive director, Rich Strom, did express some concern. However, late Friday afternoon, we talked again, and he said his members are okay with this because it the fee is minimal, it the increase is minimal, and it does give them increased dimensions and therefore some more flexibility.
And Mr. Halverson, in your previous testimony, didn't you say that the price per trip was only a couple dollars for most of these people?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. They can make as many trips as they want in a year's time for $120. Depending on the dealership, you know, some of them get it down where it's less than a dollar per trip.
All right. Well, Senator Scoy has moved that Senate File 2846, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Scoy. Senator Prettner-Solin, you're up next. And then we will take Senator Higgins' bill after that. Senator Higgins was waiting for one of her testifiers to come.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to you. This is Senate File 2586. It's a bill that attempts to balance the rights of property owners in the state of Minnesota with the need to have reliable electricity in the state. The CapEx 2020 lines are in different stages of permitting, but are moving forward to meet the energy needs of our state. As these lines are going through this process of applying for site permits, landowners have been raising concerns about some of the proposed routes. In response to these concerns, we have proposed this bill, and we believe we need to do all that we can to minimize the taking of private land and maximize the use of publicly owned land that has already been condemned. This bill attempts to do just that by putting into law that it is a priority of the state for high voltage transmission to run along existing utility corridors and highway rights of ways. I understand that this is not always feasible. Current law already requires that the PUC consider a number of criteria, including but not limited to environmental impacts, agricultural impacts, as well as consideration of problems raised by other state and federal agencies and local entities, to name a few. The purpose of this bill is twofold. First, we want the Commission to prioritize routes that utilize existing utility corridors and rights-of-ways. Second, we want to make sure that the Department of Transportation is a participant in the process to help identify how and where these lines can utilize existing rights-of-ways. I am encouraged to hear that the agency has been a good partner throughout the CapEx process. I want to make it clear that the intention of this bill is not to undermine the ability of MnDOT in protecting the traveling public. In its current form, we believe it does not restrict their ability to fulfill their responsibility to the public. We have been meeting with MnDOT to try and find language that accommodates their concerns, but also accomplishes our goal of minimizing the taking of private land for much-needed electric transmission. With the projected transmission needs growing in the future, I believe this approach is the most responsible way to meet both the electric demands of our state and the rights of landowners. And I have with me Dr. Burl Haar from the PUC, who will be making some very brief comments. And in addition, we have Priti Patel, XL Energy, and she'll be making some comments also in support of the bill.
Mr. Haar, welcome to the committee. You're normally not in front of the Transportation Committee. We're probably a little friendlier than the committee that you get in front of.
We'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. You should have received a one-page handout.
Mr. Haar, can you pull the microphone a little closer?
Yep. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you.
You should have received a one-page handout, sort of a flow chart that gives you a visual of the process that we use for our permitting, our route permitting. And just to kind of give you a basis for some of the things I'm just going to say very briefly. Permitting of transmission lines is governed by Statute 216E and also Minnesota Rule 7850. Generally, commissions or lines that are 100 kilovolts or larger are required to be permitted by the Public Utilities Commission. And the Commission's actions preempt local regulations, although smaller projects can fall under local review and do. And the route permit decision of the Public Utilities Commission sets the basis then for other agency permitting requirements. State agencies, typically MnDOT and Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, may have affected interests in one of these proceedings. Before the PUC process begins, agencies may become aware of the projects through our biennial transmission plan process. We receive these every November in an odd-numbered year. They provide details about transmission and planning intentions. And also, there are required pre-application consultation sessions with our colleagues at the Department of or the Office of Energy Security, wherein these projects are discussed. Upon a route application, which is the beginning point on the diagram that I just referenced, agencies may participate in a variety of ways and do. First of all, the development of the environmental impact assessment record is a very key part of our permitting process. Agencies and other parties can comment on the scope of that review and propose alternatives in that process. They can also later on comment on the draft EIS and also on the final environmental impact statement. Also, agencies can participate in the contested proceeding, which is a little farther down on the flow diagram towards the bottom there, as a formal party. So those are the primary ways in which agencies such as MnDOT and DNR can participate in our permitting process. That's all I really have to say, I guess, unless there are questions, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Haar, I do have one question. You know, there's already 12, 13, 14 parameters in law that say you have to already do this. How is this going to help above what we already have in law?
Mr. Chair, the way I see the bill being different is that you're right, the commission does need to consider existing right-of-ways. That is one of the existing requirements. This bill, as I understand it, would require the commission to look at it as those existing right-of-ways as a priority, sort of a first among equals, and to try to make use of those to the maximum extent possible.
Mr. Hart, do you do that currently?
It is certainly a consideration, yes, Mr. Chair, and it is something that in our public hearings, we have extensive public hearings in these matters. There's a great deal of public interest, as you can imagine. One of the very first things we typically hear at those hearings is, well, why can't we put it on existing rights of way, particularly highway rights of way? And this, as I see it, the bill provides direction to the commission that the commission is to give this a priority, to make it a higher priority than perhaps it has.
Okay. Ms. Patel, let's get your test. Oh, Senator Dahl, and then Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Haar, when you're doing this, my question would be about federal regulations, transportation federal regulations. Is there, with this language, see any potential conflicts with the way we have the language set up that would preclude you from going forward, or is that your experience?
Mr. Chair, I guess we'd have to really defer to the Department of Transportation for advice to advise us on that process. It's certainly something that the commission would want to take into account and would need to take into account, but we would really need to rely on their participation in our process to be able to help us understand those implications.
Senator Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dahl, this language in our bill, though, was modeled after Wisconsin law that was adopted in 2003, and I'm not aware that they've run into any problems, and it has really helped streamline their process.
And just for the committee's note, Wisconsin has a few different set of circumstances when roads have to be expanded and utilities move from Minnesota. And, Mr. Haar, that's the point that I wanted to make, was that when you look at this as being your preferred option, are you looking at the 20 or 40-year potential on that highway corridor? Because now that MnDOT has a little bit of money and they're managing it well, we're going to start expanding some of our roadways. And as you know, it gets a little expensive if we have to dig up towers and move them. And is that part of the consideration that you go through?
Mr. Chair, we know that highways have long lives. Transmission facilities also have long lives. That would have to be coordinated, and those contingencies would have to be contemplated in the planning process, yes.
Yeah, because, Mr. Haar, I think that, most of this blowback is coming either out of my district or the one right next to it, and it's the not-in-my-backyard crowd. They're fighting windmills. I mean, they fought the nuclear plant. It's the same crowd. And, I could go either way on this bill, but the bottom line is that power lines have to be built, roads have to be built, and if we have to move power lines to build roads and the public finds out that we're spending twice the amount of money that we should have been spending, they're going to be outraged. And I would be outraged, too. So I just, I for one don't believe we need this bill, but that's a decision up to the committee. Senator Skoy and then Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you addressed part of what my concern was. It seems kind of risky to be putting these lines down the highway when, if you do have to move them, the utilities are going to bear the cost of that. But if my question is, I have a couple questions. Who has the jurisdiction over that right of way when you would be going down a highway or a road right of way? Does the road authority have the jurisdiction? Who's ultimately responsible?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, the use of an existing right of way by by a utility would the facility would run basically parallel to the existing right of way. The right of way that owned by the or that possessed by the Department of Transportation presumably would they'd have jurisdiction over that. It's the utility commission's permit that would give the utilities the right to use that. So I'm not a lawyer. That's perhaps a nuanced question of the law that I don't fully appreciate, but that's my understanding.
And then, Mr. Chair, if the road has done environmental mitigation for their road, would the utility or the power line be able to utilize some of that mitigation? Have you thought about that at all?
Mr. Chair, Senators, we haven't gotten to that level of detail, I guess, at this point. I mean, again, all of these contingencies would be things that the Commission would need to take into account and would take into account in the development of the record that would come before it on a permitting application.
And just a comment, Mr. Chair. It's real interesting that this bill is here because I have a bill dealing with utilities on road right-of-ways. It's in the Environment Committee. The DNR has placed a $5,000 fee on these utilities whenever their lines cross state land, even if it's within the highway right-of-way. And they raised that from $500 to $5,000 last year. So I'm interested that you're trying to do more of that. But anyway, thank you for your answers.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Haar, when we did this bill in Energy and Utilities the other day, I had to think back. I couldn't really figure out what kind of things might bother me. So I went looking for some research and so I guess what I'm going to be asking is do you know of research out there? Because when I first went to college, which was, you know, like 100 years ago, I actually took some courses on siting utilities and roads and stuff. And number one, back then we always said that you would never put major power lines along roadways for security reasons, because if somebody was going to come and do something with infrastructure, they would be able to knock out two pieces of infrastructure simultaneously. So it was just we were just taught that was not a good thing to do in terms of siting. But as we're looking through some of these things, I started thinking about, because somebody came in and was talking about trying to force a priority of putting lines perhaps down on the bridge on 169. And thinking back to the 35 bridge, I thought about harmonic resonance and different harmonics that are created by vehicles traveling across roads and bridges, and thinking of the electromagnetic fields potentially created by high voltage lines, that those might not be in harmony with each other, and therefore this might not be a good thing, especially on bridges, because we don't know there's enough other metal in bridges. And then I was looking at some of the future of the safety equipment that MnDOT uses to direct trucks, and some of the things that we're talking about putting in cars for collision avoidance and things. And it just occurs to me, and I couldn't find any research, so I'm wondering if you've seen any research that might indicate that a certain voltage line or something may be actually in conflict with some of these things we're trying to do in terms of highway safety.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I haven't done research along that line myself, but the issues you just described, I think, provide a great example of the kinds of balancing and contemplation that the Commission has to deal with on matters like this, and certainly would need to be taking account of, under these circumstances. So it's a multifaceted process. It involves lots of details, and to avoid the kinds of situations that you were describing, I think is certainly an important part of what the Commission would need to do.
Mm-hmm. So then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Haar, the way I'm reading this bill, then, in terms of putting the priorities, though, what I'm envisioning, and correct me if I'm wrong, that somebody would say, well, because this is a priority, you figure out how to deal with potential electromagnetic interference first and put it alongside the road rather than siting it in a new area or getting new right-of-ways for that. Would that, because of that priority, would that mean we'd have to work those details out before we went to another option?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not sure exactly what order in which we would do that. We've I don't know what order we would do that in at this point.
Okay, thanks.
Well, Mr. Har, the bottom line is if we build utilities along the highway, people in this room are going to get to pay for it one way or the other. I mean, it's either rate recoverable or you're going to pay for it with your gas tax. On interstate highways, anytime the utilities have to be moved, MnDOT eats the cost. And, you know, that's reflected in less road construction going on. You know, so this is a high priority item for our committee. I understand the dilemma that you folks have been in with this 2020 project since 89 or 88, something like that. It's been on the books for a long time. But, you know, everybody wants their lights to come on when they flip the switch. It's whether or not they're willing to pay for that. And, you know, I don't want the cost of our road construction to go up because of this. That's just the way I feel about it. Ms. Patel.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Priti Patel, and I'm the co-executive director of CapEx 2020. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today in support of Senate File 2589. As many of you already know, the CapEx 2020 organization is a joint initiative of 11 entities that provide electric service to a majority of the customers in Minnesota and the surrounding region. And the purpose of our joint efforts as CapEx is to plan and build transmission lines so we can ensure reliable service to our customers and provide the needed transmission capacity to encourage and support new generation outlet, including renewable energy. As you've heard today, the routing of transmission lines, as you well know, is a long and complex process. But our goals are fairly simple. One, we want to obtain our state permits in a manner that allow us to build these lines on time and on budget. And we can't do that if we get conflicting permits issued by state agencies. In order for the Public Utilities Commission to avoid issuing a route permit that later conflicts with a permit issued by another state agency, the Commission needs to fully understand whatever concerns or requirements other affected agencies have. And the only way to achieve that is for those affected state agencies to participate in the routing processes before the Commission and to identify whether the route that's being considered for the permit is in compliance with that agency's standards or rules or policies. When you get all of the affected state agencies participating in one single routing forum, we can then avoid later issued conflicting permits, which can eventually delay the construction of a project and which can eventually increase costs to our ratepayers. Our second goal is we would like to maintain some flexibility so we can work with landowners, local government, governmental units, and agencies, and really balance many of the competing interests that many of you have talked about today and help propose routes that can suit everybody's interests. In the end, the CapEx utilities are not interested in seeking a route that is in violation of any agency's rules. We would prefer that all affected agencies be overtly present in the routing processes so that informed and consistent decisions can be made. And the bill proposed by Senator Prettner-Solon represents a sharp appreciation and understanding of the importance of agency participation in routing proceedings, as well as the importance of corridor sharing when the Commission finds it reasonable. Section 1 of the bill recognizes that there is a preference to use existing corridors for new transmission. On its face, it makes common sense. If there's an existing corridor, why not look at it first and see if it can work? Of course, this section, when you read it, does state that the preference should be read in conjunction with Subdivision 7. Subdivision 7 of that statute lays out other factors the Commission is to look at, as well as other factors that are contained in their rules. When you look at Section 2 of the bill, it recognizes the importance of the partnership between the Commission and the Minnesota Department of Transportation to ensure that the permits that are issued by both two utilities are compatible and consistent and not inconsistent. The CapEx utilities believe that this partnership, which has been recently happening in the CapEx projects, you should know that DOT has been participating in the CapEx routing proceedings. This is an important part of transmission line routing, and we believe should be recognized in statute. Thank you for the opportunity to talk today.
Thank you, Ms. Patel. I don't want it to sound like I don't understand what your concerns are, and this concern about the two agencies working together is a legitimate concern. Now that we've have kind of a reinvigorated Department of Transportation, I would expect that that is a service that you're going to receive every time. They're going to be at the table. That wasn't the case 3, 4, 8, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I've got every confidence that MnDOT wants to work with the PUC so that everybody's goals are met. I don't believe that we need this language in front of us. I think that there could be a different way. It wouldn't just be a simple phone call to commissioner and just say, hey, you got to work with Mr. Haar and these folks, period. Senator Solon.
Mr. Chair, I get the drift of where you're going. And we do have alternative language that is actually just amends Section 7 or Subdivision 7. But and it doesn't require to make it a priority, that MnDOT to make the right-of-way a priority. But it does say that they would consider it and then let us know why it isn't acceptable if it's not acceptable.
And right.
And I'm wondering if if that would be possible to offer that amendment.
I take it Senator Dibble has an amendment.
Mr. Chair, for the purposes of that discussion, why don't we put the A3 amendment in front of the committee? And
okay, let's get the A3 amendment passed out.
Just seen it, but it looks worthy of discussion.
Senator Dibble has it.
So I'll move the A3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble has moved the A3 amendment. Senator Solon on the A3 amendment. Unless you don't have one yet.
Pardon?
On the A3 amendment?
I do have a copy, yeah. Mr. Chair, might I just say that the alternative to not using the right-of-way is condemning farmland and private property and going through eminent domain, and it's a very costly procedure, too. And so it seems to me that we should use the right-of-ways or already publicly condemned land whenever it's possible.
Senator Solon, I don't disagree with that statement, but to make it a priority, I think, puts MnDOT in an uncomfortable position. I think that if it was a collaborative effort between Mr. Haar's group and MnDOT, that would be the preferred route to go. Senator Dibble?
Well, Mr. Chair, as I read this language and reflect upon it and reflect upon my concerns, which I think are similar to your concerns and then some, you know, my concern reflects the concerns that MnDOT and others have brought up about the impact on the right-of-way itself, which have been discussed. I also am concerned about kind of what happens just beyond the right-of-way, you know, the fact of the matter, and we talked about this in energy and utilities as well. The fact is along a number of these transportation corridors, you find associated land uses that on which there will be significant impacts from a high voltage transmission line, houses and businesses and potential future development and the like. I'm actually a little disappointed that the local units of government aren't more involved in this discussion. I don't know if they've not been aware that this is moving through, but I meant to give them a call, but I just didn't. However, that being said, I think Senator Pretner Solon brings an issue forward, and it was expressed well by the CapEx Excel representative. You know, we need to get transmission to the metro area. We need to get transmission all across this entire country, both to serve our renewable energy standard ambitions and aspirations, but also, you know, to serve our baseload needs and the like. So, and it's really, really hard to do that. And so it is a compelling argument to make that we have corridors that kind of exist in places where it might be a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So what this looks like it does is it kind of gives a little nudge, you know, aligns 2.13 to the commission without stating preference or priority. It just says, you know, you need to fulfill the requirements of, where was that?
Well, it should be 216E.
Yeah, 1.32, evaluation of potential routes that would use parallel or existing railroad and highway rights of way. And then it just says that it's been closely considered and rejected, and what are those reasons. Fairly simple requirement, but mm-hmm. make sure that the PUC pays very specific attention you know, to that paragraph 8 on the previous page. And so it might get us there. And, you know, fully consider using those corridors, but also the potential downside to doing that. That seems like a compromise.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Solon.
I think it's enabling language that helps us to start the conversation between the departments.
Senator Solon, as your bill stands, evidently the Department of Finance is crafting another fiscal note on this, and they haven't quite got it done yet, is my understanding. Is that right, Ms. Boyd? I can only imagine what that's going to look like, knowing the fiscal notes that we've been getting lately. I don't know what they're doing down there, but it doesn't make any sense, put it that way, these fiscal notes. Senator Solon, how about we do this? How about we put the A3 amendment on? There's some more work that needs to be done because we're leaving Section 2 in the bill, and Section 2 is going to need some cleanup work to it because it's talking about the new policy. It's going to need a little bit of cleanup work, but this bill has to go to Finance. Between now and Finance, let's work out with the department what would be a good paragraph to put in there to make sure that everybody works together, as Ms. Patel was talking about and what Mr. R. Would like to see.
Fine with me, Mr. Chair.
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
All right. On the A3 Dibble motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble then moves Senate File 2589 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Senator Higgins, are you ready with your bill?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I have a couple of handouts to start out with.
All right, we'll get those out for you. Senator Higgins, Senate File 2585.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, last fall I attended a meeting hosted by Representative Keith Ellison about the disadvantaged business enterprises. The room was packed. It was wall to wall with people. Some were sitting on the floor. Some were just leaning against the walls because there weren't any more chairs. At that meeting, I heard a lot, and I was really disturbed about what I heard. I started taking lots of notes, and afterwards started working on what has become this bill. I've had several meetings with MnDOT and worked with community members, and one thing is certain. MnDOT must attain their goals for hiring women and minority-owned construction companies. The MnDOT DBE program goals are 8.75%. And they're currently hitting about 6.59%. For about $500 million in federal stimulus money, $32 million went to women and minority-owned businesses. MnDOT must do better, and that's what this bill is all about. I've listened to concerns from MnDOT, from DBEs, contractors, community groups, and I have the A3 amendment that reflects the work that we have continued to do since the bill was introduced. And if that could be handed out, that would be great. The A3 is not a delete-all amendment. It is an addition to the bill as it was introduced. And if I'm lucky, I'll have a copy of the original bill.
We'll just have this one. This one.
All right. On the A3 motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
So just to go through it, the Department of Transportation has had a collaborative of people who are interested in the DBE program, and it's been working for 18 months or thereabouts. It has had some pains in getting work done. It is it has some successes in coming to agreement on some ways for MnDOT to go forward, but it is also sometimes a difficult process for one and all. So, may I have a copy of the actual original bill? I don't seem to have one. No, thank you. I apologize, members. And
that's those good lobbyists from Minneapolis. Pierre is always right there.
Okay. One of the best.
So the original bill talks about half a dozen things that we identified that can make our DBE program stronger. Section 1 talks about the bids that are solicited for contracts that are paid for wholly or in part by federal funds. The bids now, the DBE goals are an afterthought. And so Section 1 would actually put put into the bid solicitation that the DBE goals have to be part of the proposal that comes into MnDOT, and it lays out the process for doing that. Section 2 spells out that contractors who don't meet their goals actually have sanctions against them. Right now, what happens too often is it's just a statement of, oh, so sad, too bad, and nothing ever happens. And so there's never improvement in getting to the goals. Section 3 says that the commissioner shall hold workshops around the metro area, especially around the metro area, to teach people how to estimate and bid and become a DBE, and so we can increase the pool of people who can do the work. I got an email from Congressman Keith Ellison just the other day stating that MnDOT has just gotten a grant to help with the training and capacity building, and it is almost $900,000 to help pay for this process. And I'm really excited about that. Section 4 requires an annual report to your committee about the DBE program, and it spells out the information that we want to collect and give to you. There are things like how the number of bids have been increased, the department's efforts to monitor the contracts and make sure that that everything is going better. And you can, rather than me read you those, you're welcome to read them yourself. Section 5 would require that the department submit a request to the Federal Department of Transportation for a waiver
of the provisions of the DBE rules that that state that women and minority-owned businesses have the same bid against one another for the same percentage of work. And I would think that if we could get separate goals for women and minority-owned companies, we can increase the amount of work that goes to them both. This is not meant in any way to pit one group against the other. This is to increase our capacity. Then the A3 amendment talks about the collaborative and states that the commissioner shall provide staff and administrative support, establish policies and procedures for the collaborative. Also says that representatives of MnDOT, civil rights and contracting will participate, but MnDOT does not have a vote. Also states that the collaborative is to work on the items that I just listed in the original bill. Both members of the collaborative and MnDOT staff were in conversations with us, were really adamant that the work of the collaborative should go forward. And so the way we have this bill structured now, we are asking the collaborative to actually work on the items that are in the bill and then reporting back to your committee at the beginning of next session. And if they are able to come to agreement and put in place all of these items, then we may not need the actual underlying bill. They would have accomplished the work that we wanted them to do by doing this bill. It's a little complicated, but I think it should be able to work. And that then empowers the collaborative to go forward and try to come to agreements on some of these issues that have been thorny issues for them. And then, Mr. Chair, I have one more item that, is in the A2 amendment, if we can have that passed out. The DBE program, as it is structured now, is only for projects that are funded in some part or wholly by federal funds. And one of the contractors in my district pointed out that our own state contracts don't have any goal for hiring women or minority-owned companies. I thought that was a pretty big thing to just chunk into this bill at this point. So Ms. Berezovsky helped draft this amendment that would require the commissioner to put in place a process for making goals for projects that are funded through state funds, but not any federal funds. So that's what the A2 amendment would be.
Okay. On the A2 motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Did I not explain that correctly, Ms. Berezovsky? No, you're okay.
No, she was asking me about a parliamentary procedure. Since this is your first stop, right, Senator Higgins?
It is indeed.
Okay, we're just trying to get the bill in the shape that you want it in.
Okay. I haven't seen the agenda, so I'm not sure who all has been signed up to testify. I have Lewis King and...
We have Mr. Copeland and Mr. King, if they could come to the table first, and then we will do... I'm going to butcher this name. I'm going to butcher that name. It's Mr. Morrow and Cantrafone. Is it? Okay. All right. You two will be next then. Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Good
My name is Richard Copeland. I live at 904 10th Avenue North. I'm a constituent of Senator Higgins. Well, I'm here to speak to the bill, the need for the bill. I'm a contractor. I'm the largest African-American contractor in the nation. I cut my teeth in this DBE program here in Minnesota. We're headquartered here. I've been in business. I don't know if today is the 10th, but if it's the 10th of March, is it?
Tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow is my 30th anniversary. So,
well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. In fact, I'm one of the few graduates from the DBE program that I know that exists in this state. Most companies get caught in the quagmire of trying to operate doing highway contracting when the highway contracting is like it's a kill zone for minority business. Those that try to work in it, flourish in it, get killed in it because the good old boy network is alive and well in Minnesota on highway projects. This bill is sorely needed to help level the playing field for us to lift our communities up, for us to economically stimulate the underutilized communities. We need legislation like this. We need to level the playing field so that we can have a fair share, fair opportunity to participate in the mainstream of this economy. The stimulus money that's been generated for highway work, state aid projects that have in the past had no goals, have systematically kept us an underclass in the state of Minnesota. We need help. We need legislation like this.
Thanks. Thank you.
Mr. King,
please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Louis J. King, President and CEO of Summit Academy OIC. I want to say good afternoon to the committee, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having me today. I want to thank Senator Higgins for inviting me to testify. Mr. Chair, committee members, as a former Army officer, I understand the need for the discipline of work and cohesion in the community. And employment offers a stability to families that allow for that cohesion. We are here today to ask for your support, ensuring that minority firms have the opportunity on an equal and level playing field to do business so that they can help to make Minnesota stronger and also to earn a living. For the past 18 months, I have been involved in efforts with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to ensure that there was equal access on the workforce front, alongside those like Mr. Copeland, who were primarily responsible for the efforts in DBEs. I'm at this point guardedly optimistic about the progress that we've made. I want to give the department credit for the work that they put in, and also our friends in labor and the Association of General Contractors. At the same time, we have to keep in mind that while we are in the midst of this process, the letting process, that is the collaborative process at MnDOT, the letting process, which lets business, is still proceeding. And so where the rubber really meets the road, we've not yet tested. And we feel that at some point it will be necessary to codify these efforts so that even once we are successful with a change in administration, we don't go back to zero. But in the short term, we need real help to make sure that the work that we do arrives in a timely fashion. It would not be good if we found ourselves at the end of this season in the same position that we were last year. And I think that's the spirit, that people are sitting at the table working together, but understanding, too, that we need to use all methods to ensure that whatever progress we make does not change simply because of an election and that we do not turn back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. King. And those are very wise words because politicians come and go and bureaucrats are forever. And, you know, you're not always going to have a strong fighter like Senator Higgins to the left of you there. but we're always going to have bureaucrats. We'll always have bureaucrats. So, any questions from the committee? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, on your A3 amendment under the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Collaborative, it starts off with a Commissioner of Transportation shall convene, and I'm just wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to say, or his, her designee. Was that, what did the Commissioner of Transportation say with regard to that? I don't usually find that it says, you know, the Commissioner shall have that duty.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think that in this case it's meant as the commissioner broadly, you know, the department. In many of the bills that I work on, when we're talking about the department, we actually say the commissioner, and so it's in his broad authority.
Thank you.
And Senator Bonoff, this does need to go to state and local, and Senator Rest's committee normally goes through line by line, and they'll change those references, so it will be and his designee. Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to welcome Mr. King, who is my constituent. And I cannot think of someone who has a more powerful voice for ensuring people have a job and that what that means to families and what that means to like, you know, individuals. So I applaud your efforts. I have witnessed your you know, commitment to this and how it just inspires people. And I know you held a rally with HIRE last year, and I think some of us went out and really want to thank you for all that you're doing with this issue and also working with the department in a very respectful way. I think that that's very important, and I think that you carry that respect with you. So thank you so much for your work on this issue.
Mr. King, and Mr. Copeland, I've got the same question for both of you. You briefly touched on your experiences working through the collaborative. Can you, and Mr. King, you said you're guardedly optimistic. Can you help me understand that process a little bit better?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to address Senator Saltzman.
Oh, sure.
Senator Saltzman, it is indeed a pleasure to work with you and be your neighbor, and good to see you here, and thank you for your support. Having said that, as you may well be aware, last year we conducted a series of public protests aimed at bringing attention to the disparities that had been documented with the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the prime contractors in the workforce arena. By midsummer, we actually had a report from MnDOT, which they submitted to the federal government, showing and documenting for the first time to the public how far we were from reaching the goals. As it turned out, it appeared that if we worked together, we could get it done. I do want to commend Bernie Arsenault and the commissioner. They took a significant risk, and I initially was not a believer in the process. However, once we moved beyond protests and came to the table, we committed all of our resources to making the process a success. On the workforce side, we have been able to form unprecedented partnerships with the 49ers, get the department to instate new policies that we have yet to enact. We will go hot in May. So when I say guardedly optimistic, while the collaborative has approved the processes, we still have to go through an adoption phase with the department and then an implementation phase where the actual players on the ground have to get it done. This requires commitment, discipline, and shared risk. Up to this point, we've managed to work through our differences. I've been very pleased with the progress of the work, yet and still my main concern is that this not go away in the future and that we live up to our promises. So we are acting in good faith. However, we must be on task to ensure that we deliver on the promises.
Mr. Copeland.
Yes, Commissioner, Senator Murphy. Unlike Lewis, and let me say, I agree. Lewis is a real champion in our community. I'm proud to serve on his board and at his pleasure. That being said, I'm not so optimistic. Over a year ago, just over a year ago, I was asked to sit on this collaborative. Last year, we met countless times, and a whole year of construction went by without any progress made on having more inclusion take place. One whole year, hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of millions of dollars didn't come into our community for the 17th year in a row. The goals were not met. You got to, let me just back up and say, Lewis represents workforce. I represent DBE contractors, women and minority-owned businesses trying to participate on highway work. Mm-hmm. So 17 years in a row, we missed all last year. We're still meeting. They're taking up hundreds of hours of businesses' time, minority women-owned businesses' time, meeting and meeting and meeting with nothing of substance happening all last year. And now we are here again. This is our second season. 80% of MnDOT's money is spent in the first 4 months of the year. So we're going to miss this whole year. 2 years we've missed. 2 years we've been working on this with very little progress. That's why I'm glad Senator Higgins has introduced this legislation.
Well, thank you. Senator Higgins, thank you both, gentlemen. Why don't we hear from some of the other testifiers? And we have the two that I mentioned earlier. I'll listen more closely this time for your name, ma'am, so that I'll be able to.
Rod.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I wanted to...
Will you please state your name for the
record? Sorry. Yes, Sinawan Chanthapan. I am one of the board members of Fremont Community Health Clinics, and I am also here in part to support Senator Higgins' bill, as well as speak a little bit more about dual goals within the bill and how that affects the community in which I am a part of. The spirit of the legislation is to recognize that many have been denied in transference of financial wealth to local communities. The support of this bill, I think for many people in the Asian community, represents a voice that is normally not heard on the foothills of the Capitol steps. In recognizing dual goals, which is the separation of goals for women and ethnic minorities, minorities are allowed a voice that is not heard to be recognized and realized, which from my past speakers is obviously something that has been going on for a while. It is also to help in the distribution of wealth to communities that need improvement, i.e. specifically the north side of Minneapolis, as well as different areas in the metro, and also to help people bring in more money, wages, back into community and reinvest in that community, which right now is in a little bit more despair. This bill that Senator Higgins has introduced is an opportunity for us to rectify these grievances, and it is also the opportunity for us to provide work for people who are willingly and diligently seeking it. So I commend the collaborative of MnDOT in their efforts to find a consensus, but in also speaking to many of the DBEs and community stakeholders, I've realized that this bill helps to not only just put MnDOT's feet to the fire a little bit, but it gives teeth to many people that need that in order to work in the state. So I speak not only for myself, but for the fellow community members that I represent, and also as a graduating college student at the University of St. Thomas. I look back as a Laotian American and a first-year Laotian American, and I see my parents who did everything they could and took any menial job possible in an effort to see me graduate from prestigious college, of which I did. So this is not just small, and it is not just about transportation, and it is not just us sitting here talking about MnDOT, but it is how we can affect the community. So I ask, Mr. Chair, committee members, that you open the doors and you hold them open for people who are looking for work and are seeking it and are, like we all are, trying to find a little bit of a better life for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chantrafone. Mr. Morrow?
Great. Mr. Chair and Council, I thank you for the opportunity to come and voice the opinion of...
Sir, could you give your name again for the record,
I'm sorry.
Please?
My name is Benjamin Morrow, and I am the owner representative of Steel Erection Technology. I'm a steel erector. I've been in business since 1978, and I was one of the original members when MnDOT formed their minority their program. Okay, I've been in this arena for what, over 32 years. A few more years than my illustrious compadre. But anyway, I was here when MnDOT had some teeth in their bill. When they set goals, they said, this is what we're going to do. If you don't comply with it, you won't get the job. This is what they told the minority contractors. Excuse me. This is what they told the majority contractors. First of all, we had a good faith effort. That didn't work, like it's not working now. Because if I'm not held to any standards as a minority, as a general contractor, why should I adhere to any kind of rules? What I'm trying to say is, if there's no teeth in this, what is it in it for? How are you going to come against me if I don't do what you say that I'm supposed to do? I applaud the Senator Higgins for bringing something to the floor, okay, for the majority contractors to adhere to. I've been in this arena when it was like this, a good faith effort. I was in it when the federal government came out and said, you have to have goals, you have to have rules. Then AGC came in and fought that and took that down. For about 2 or 3 years, Minnesota or the Department of Transportation did not have any kind of goals. Then they found another way to get around that. Now we're going back to the good faith effort. This is better than nothing. We have had some of the different things that have been going on that are like this, but it's not enough. Okay? We haven't gone far enough. This is a good start, a very good start, but it is still not enough. And so you say, well, what can you do? You as legislators are going to have to put more stringent rules and regulations in your bidding process to make the majority contractors adhere to the standards that the federal government and your state, when they put out the bidding process.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Questions, members? Okay, Senator Higgins, we will move down the list. Mr. Marlowe?
Thank you. I'm Mr. Marlowe.
Quadri Drakeford? Mr. Marlowe, welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Well, I'm kind of nervous here, but my name is Jalario Marlowe, and I'm with SNL Masonry, and with DBE. This is my wife, Stephanie, and we're here to support this bill. I hear these guys here that's been doing this longer than I have. We are a young company, and we are trying to meet the goals as far as with MnDOT. We are now on the collaborative team, and I don't want to go on and on, but as far as good faith, I want to clarify this as far as with good faith. I have a lot of people that give me as far as bids to bid on, and they have no intentions as far as good faith. This is just something that is put before them so they can do this because you guys say that they have to do these things, but they don't have no intention of giving me work. And I just wanted to clarify that. I mean, it's sad that I have to come in here and ask you guys to pass something to benefit me and my family. And I just wanted to say I'm happy to be here so I can voice my opinion, but that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Marlowe. And Ms. Stephanie Marlowe?
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. I don't have any comment at this time because this is our first time in a meeting like this. No comment.
Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair?
Questions? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marlowe, I'm interested in your experience with in this bidding process. Do they give you a reason why does that ever come out, why you might have not gotten the bid?
Well,
Mr. Marlowe,
to be honest with you, I would like to say, but I have approached a lot of general contractors for work, and I ask them to help us as far as mentor us and different things like that for us to grow. And the reason they have is just say that I'm incompetent of doing the work without even giving it to me. I've had that offered to me every time that I go and ask for work. They say, well, you know, we had people like you come up and ask for work, but you're not competent or able to do the work. And, you know, that's sad that I have to hear these things, but I guess that's the way life is.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Dahl.
Thank you. I'm sorry to hear that, Mr. Marlowe. You're working with you've been in the business now for a while, and you're getting jobs other places. So it's just with like MnDOT that
with MnDOT, with other organizations, Med Council, and other organizations. Not just with MnDOT.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marlowe, so you have been getting work, but it's been, what, in private sector rather than any government contracts? Is that, or have you been successful at all in getting any subcontracting on a government project?
Well,
Mr. Marlowe.
Yes. We got work from MnDOT a year ago, and we're working on the project right now with the park. We're doing some stone work there. And, you know, I'm happy to say that we are doing work with them, but it's just so far and in between, you know. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
The stone hasn't fallen off yet, I presume, and so have you got some pictures that you can take along and show some of these other contractors that you actually can do the job?
Yes.
Mr. Marlowe.
Yes.
Good.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you both very much. And Quadri Drakeford and Lenny Chisholm. And who would like to go first and state your name for the record, please?
My name is Quadri Drakeford. First of all, I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee. And I'm in full support of this bill. I'd like to thank Ms. Higgins for introducing the bill, and I believe it's a key to increasing more qualified minority contractors and opening up the doors of opportunity for more young businesses such as myself and a lot of other folks that I'm in the room with.
Thank you, Mr. Drakeford. Mr. Chisholm?
Chisholm. Lenny Chisholm.
Lenny, very
Executive
good.
Director of Springboard Economic Development Corporation. I would first like to commend and ingratiate Senator Higgins for her efforts to rectify some of the situations that are going on currently with MnDOT contracts. I'd also like to bring to the table that this is a project that I've taken on as a result of the 8.5-cent gas tax legislation that was passed several years ago. One of the things that came out of that was I knew that these were dirty jobs that needed to be funneled through our communities. And all people are entitled to work under these contracts. I then walked over and I asked, how can I be involved so that we could bring those dirty jobs? My grandfather wore dirty boots to work every day. One of the things that came out of that was it was determined that this is a civil rights program we're talking about. Title VI is how this program came about. MnDOT has a contract with the Federal Highway Administration called the Stewardship Plan. That plan is how we're regulated and perform the contracts under federal-funded contracts. Within that, MnDOT has an obligation to follow a set of regs called 49 CFR Part 26. This is very well documented. It's millions and millions of hours have went into developing this program. One of the key components was MnDOT asked us to come to the table and say, we want to work through this process using a group outside of MnDOT called the Collaborative. Well, last year was called the Work Group. So here we are 18 months later, $600 million has come out of the community, and we've only gotten $400,000 to African-American contractors. That in itself is what we're in this room to talk about. One of the things that comes out of this process is there is a book which every member of the Collaborative should have, but over time I've discovered it. It's the desk reference for the DBE program. It talks about the program and the things that can make the program successful. One of the things I like to bring up is in this book it talks about who must have a DBE program. And it talks how MnDOT is supposed to implement that program. One of the key words in that program is that it says, under this regulation, 49 CFR Part 26.21, item B, if there's any significant changes to the program, and this is where I come back and I say, I like the Collaborative. It's an excellent start. But if there's any significant changes, MnDOT shall not be taken off the hook for the implementation of their program. The only way they can make significant changes is they have to put in the waiver. That waiver has to be delivered to the Secretary of the Department of Transportation. His name currently is Secretary Ray LaHood, who I've met. And I've said the same thing to the Secretary. We need to make sure that every citizen who participates in the tax system gets an opportunity to make a living under any federal contracts that come out. We have to realize that we're here debating, is this a significant change which will let MnDOT operate differently than the contract that they signed called the Stewardship Plan? That is what I'm here to talk about today. We want to make sure that they are not removed from the 49 CFR Part 26, that they are still, as we work through the Collaborative, applying all of those rules. I commend Senator Higgins for taking the step to say we need to address the issues, because in the end, every taxpayer is supposed to benefit under the new Reconstruction Plan of America, where they're taking dirty jobs, one boot at a time, men, women of all ethnicities, and putting America back together, which is the infrastructure projects.
Thank you. Questions, members? Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, and this is partially because I don't understand as much about the DBE program in Minnesota as I should, but why in your legislation establish a collaborative where they're drafting recommendations?
Somebody's got a BlackBerry going, and if we want to get the static off the intercom, we need to shut that off. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So why have a collaborative come up with recommendations, and why not just have the collaborative or the working group that's already been meeting bring forth recommendations and pass those recommendations into statute? See what I'm saying? Why not just propose making the changes that we need to see in state statute to make sure the goals are met?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins. And Senator Sieben, that's exactly what this bill does. This bill actually puts the goals in place, the original bill, and then the amendment asks that the collaborative work out details of it and come back and report then at the beginning of next session.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Any other
questions? I'm not sure I still have the language right. but we've got at least one more stop to go before it gets to a passage point. And I'm still trying to figure out a couple of the details, but that's where I want to get to.
Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Parker?
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Kenya McKnight would also like to testify.
Ms. McKnight?
McKnight.
To the committee, Mr. Parker, and if folks, when you're testifying, if you could sign in, that would be helpful.
Oh, sure. Can you sign first?
Yes. Mr. Parker.
Hello, committee. Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. My name is Troy Parker, and first, I also want to start by thanking Senator Higgins for this legislation. I think it will go a long way of in helping and including more people into the contracting process at MnDOT and other organizations. I formerly was a DBE contractor. I was a mechanical contractor, and I've seen the same similar steps taken at MAC Council and other organizations that yielded significant benefits to pretty much all communities. And I say that based on the fact that as I spoke to some senators earlier in their office or other at other times, you know, it also allows and encourages these DBE contractors to also subcontract portions of work with other DBE contractors, which in a nutshell levels the playing field, because you're not just asking prime contractor to do one thing and allowing a whole nother set of rules for a DBE contractor. You're now requiring all contractors to pretty much operate on the same basis. And you know, when you look at the $643 million that was given out in federally assisted road construction contracts in Minnesota, 96.5% of these contracts were awarded to non-DBE contractors. 2.6% went to women-owned DBE contractors. But yet women make up 50% of our population. Minority contractors were awarded less than 1% of MnDOT contracts. CFR 49 Part 26.1 mandates that MnDOT level the playing field. It further requires MnDOT to remove barriers that hinders participation of DBE contractors, and it establishes, encourages, and insists in raising the number and the variety of contractors in the DBE program. And the reason that is so important is because when the prime contractors speak as not being able to meet the goal because the workforce or the number of contractors aren't available, that is also a requirement of MnDOT. And that has been a requirement for years as they received these federal funds. So because they didn't go out and carry out the entire portion, I mean, that wasn't totally in compliance with the federal regulation, does not mean that we should award them by saying that there wasn't any contractors available. They're available. Now it's time for us to certify them and get them into the program. And then that would open up the doors for more prime contractors to have more DBE contractors to use in the subcontracting process. But one thing I do want to caution us about, and this is why I'm in full support of this bill, is because now as minorities, communities fight for more participation, we want to also protect the women DBEs from being victimized by increased minority participation on contracts. Now, Senate File 2585 will encourage more participation from both subgroups in the DBE program while still allowing non-DBE contractors to compete for over 85% of total contract dollars coming out of the Department of Transportation. So I think when you take that in the entire scope of the money coming out and the number of contracts coming out of the MnDOT, we're looking at possibly 10 to 15% going to possibly 75% of the population and still allowing and approving the remaining 85% to be sought after by maybe about 25% of our total population of the state. So I think this bill does not harm anyone else in a negative fashion. I just think it increases and encourages more participation by all citizens of Minnesota. And I thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. And Ms. McKnight?
Yes, good afternoon. Kenya McKnight, representing Higher Minnesota, also a constituent of Senator Linda Higgins. I just want to reiterate, as a participant of the collaborative process, that, as you know, Higher Minnesota has served greatly in helping the collaborative create a structure that they can work in to create goals around workforce, et cetera. The DBE aspect has been rather hard. That discussion has been rather tough. And at this point, it seems that it's at a standstill, where there's just, you know, maybe shouting back and forth about both sides wanting to make sure they walk out even on the contractors and the smaller DBE side. And so we believe that this bill ultimately will help create a structure for both parties to work within, but also give it more teeth so that this fight for the DBEs is not gone dormant over the process of, you know, this legislation period. And so that's really our spill. And again, I just want to reiterate, Higher Minnesota has definitely served as a leader in helping to create process for MnDOT within the collaborative. However, the DBE aspect of it has not been as easy to do based on the history of the DBE situation within the department as well as the state on other levels. And so this bill, again, will help create a structure so that we can move forward in the conversation and start working on defining what those goals look like, et cetera. So that's our bid for supporting this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKnight. Questions, members? Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and I don't have a question of the testifiers, but thank you for your testimony. But since we have this before us right now, and I'm curious if we can get maybe someone from MnDOT to, it was brought up that, you know, from Mr. Parker, that there's a pretty big discrepancy on the awarded contracts, and maybe they, if there's someone here that could give us, shed some light from their perspective as to why that might be.
Thank you, Senator Dahl, and I was going to ask if MnDOT wanted to come up. We have one more testifier that might bring a little different perspective. Mr. Werke from the... Thank you both very
thank
much.
Thank you.
And I don't know, Senator Higgins, do you know, is MnDOT, they're not on our testifiers list. Are they, have you worked with them? Are they prepared to testify, or is that something down the road? Or
I know Mr. Arsenault, Mr. Chair, Mr. Arsenault is out of town, but I don't know whether anybody else from MnDOT is going to testify or not. They didn't tell me.
And members, this bill has another stop, and so Senator Higgins has indicated she's going to continue to work on this language. We do have another bill on the agenda, so we're going to move along. Let's get Mr. Werke, and then I'll go to Senator Bonnop. Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. I'm the Highway Division Manager, and I appreciate the opportunity on a busy agenda to come and give a few remarks. I'm going to be abbreviated in my remarks, and let me thank Senator Higgins for allowing me to make a few remarks as well about her legislation. A couple of remarks and a couple of points I think that need to be clarified. First of all, with respect to our position, AGC believes the current DBE and employment programs are performing at less than their capabilities, and we support the efforts to improve those programs. We recognize that these are public tax dollars paid by all citizens of Minnesota, and as such, there needs to be strong outreach for inclusion across all business and employment spectrums. The programs need to work for both general contractors and for DBEs. If general contractors are not successful, then I submit that DBEs will not be successful as well. AGC fully supports and is committed to the efforts of the collaborative, but we also believe solutions and changes need to be discussed in a productive and respectful environment within that collaborative. As Mr. Parker pointed out in his testimony, and I would echo as well, AGC believes the best way to improve the program is to build a strong stable of certified and qualified DBE firms in the highway program, and this is an important distinction. Currently, MnDOT maintains a list of approximately 450 certified DBEs. Within that list, only about 250 of those firms have NAICS or NAICS codes that indicate that they could perform highway work. And of that 250, only about 40 to 50 actually regularly either bid directly or quote to prime contractors regularly on highway work, 40 to 50. So we think that needs to be expanded upon and improved in order for this program to work better. A couple of points of clarification. It was stated that MnDOT has never attained the goal over the course of this program. That is not accurate. In 2007, or in 2004 and 2007, the department did exceed the goal that they published for the combined program. In 2004, the goal was 5.8, and they attained 6.4, and in 2007, the goal was 6.27, and they attained 8.6. Good faith efforts. When you hear about good faith efforts, this is a federally administered program with federal rules. Good faith efforts are allowable under the federal program. We cannot, by virtue of state action, determine that good faith efforts can't be allowed. And good faith efforts come into play when we are talking about goals. Because, for example, in illustration purposes, if there is a goal on a project of 6% and the prime contractor has gone out and procured 3% active participation from DBEs, and through whatever means and measures could not get an additional 3%, he is allowed to show good faith effort. That is allowed under the federal rules. But we need to find ways to make good faith effort better in this program so it is more transparent, it is more accurate, it is meaningful. Lastly, with one other item important to the bidding process, we need to remember that this is a low bid marketplace. Contractors, to be successful, have to be the low bidder. So when soliciting these bids and quotes from DBE subcontractors, price is often, not always, but price is a determinant, a significant determinant. Because if you cannot get your bid to be low, you can have as many DBE firms on your subcontractor list, and you still will not be able to employ those firms because you are not low bid. We need to work on those things. Lastly, it's a tough marketplace. And right now in this marketplace, contractors are bidding low. We're having multiple bids on contracts. We recognize at AGC that it is a very tough marketplace for subcontractors as well. And we also recognize that especially an emerging woman or minority-owned firm to compete on price is a very difficult proposition. These are things that we are struggling to work on within the collaborative, that we need to find ways to do better, to be able to provide some assistance within the confines of the rules to make this program work better. I commend Senator Higgins. I think the amendment makes this bill much more acceptable. We have committed all of our efforts to the collaborative, and we believe that the collaborative will have some successes that we can come back and report to you next year. I also want to say that we do not support, and AGC of America, our parent organization, does not support splitting the goals between women and ethnic minority groups. We think and believe that that's a divisive strategy, but we need to have that discussion within the collaborative. I don't think that's a discussion that we'd like to have here and have arguments here in front of this committee. So finally, I would say that we support the activities of the collaborative. We'll continue to work within that structure to identify solutions that work for all parties. We further ask that the collaborative membership be better defined and the protocols for interaction be structured to produce productive meetings with identified participants who can speak for and are charged with authority for making decisions on behalf of their representative interests. I believe Senator Higgins' A3 amendment does that, and we could support the bill with that A3 amendment on it, and that's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Workey. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olstein. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I referenced at the beginning of the meeting the money that Congressman Ellison was helpful in getting. And I just want to tell you more about what those funds will help do in the way of
enhancing technical expertise of DBE firms in areas such as financial management, accounting, marketing, risk management. Individualized guidance will be provided when necessary. It will provide training for newly certified and currently certified DBEs. MnDOT will further provide electronic bidding to DBE firms to create a more level playing field in which the DBEs can fairly compete. So I think of this in collaboration with our congressional funds that have just come in to help. And I think that will help what Mr. Werke said, is that if we get more contractors into the market and able to compete and work with the general contractors, everybody wins. And I think those funds will help too. And Mr. Chair and members, thank you for letting us present this today. It's one of those things that for so many years I've been hearing people, as they go by a work site, especially if I'm with friends who are people of color, saying, why don't we ever see any people of color in these work sites? Why is it the workforce doesn't look like our community? And this is a good step to making sure that we don't ever have to hear that anymore, that we will have work crews out there who reflect our community here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. And I know there's a number of people that want to testify in support of this provision, but we've heard a lot of testimony in support of. Is there anyone that wants to testify in opposition to this bill? Seeing none. Questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question other than to say a statement to say thank you to Senator Higgins and the folks who are here. Many of whom I've gotten to know extremely well over the past year. I've been involved in quite a bit of this discussion as well. It's been a difficult couple of years, and particularly difficult in light of the fact that we have all the stimulus money coming into Minnesota, and it's designed to stimulate all communities and create jobs and that sort of thing, and people aren't participating as fully as we would hope. And it is my hope that eventually, maybe before I cycle out of this place or shuffle off somewhere else, that we don't even need stuff like this, that we're all participating. But the fact is, for whatever reason, historic reasons, people aren't fully participating. And, you know, it's our role as policymakers, it's the role of government to make sure that there is equal access of opportunity and to level the playing field when it's not as level as it should be. So, Mr. Chair, I know that this is going to go to state and local and it's going to wind up back here. There's probably some more discussion and work that needs to happen because I think we want to maintain the good faith conversation that's happening with MnDOT, with the AGC, and affected community as well. And there's a process underway. Some are more optimistic, others less optimistic. That's an important tension to acknowledge and an important tension to have. But when the time comes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 2585, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to state and local. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, Senator Higgins.
Thank you all very much.
Senator Youngbauer.
Senator Jungbauer, Senate File 2847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to first apologize. I'm having one of those days. Whenever the weather changes, my titanium and sheetrock screws act up, so my neck is driving me crazy today.
I hear you.
Members, Senate File 2847 is really just a prioritization bill. Once Chapter 152 expires or anything not included in that bill, we need a new method for prioritizing or continuation method for prioritizing our bridge projects, and that's what that does. And I have Nancy from MnDOT that's going to explain the details.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Dobenberger. I'm with the MnDOT Bridge Office. I'm the bridge planning engineer. And I'm here to testify on Senate File 2847, which proposes to amend Section 165 of the statute governing the Trunk Highway Bridge Improvement Program. Purpose of this bill is to require a system of bridge prioritization beyond the 2008 legislation that established what we still refer to as the Chapter 152 Bridge Program. Chapter 152 is actually part of Section 165 now, but that program concludes on June 30th of 2018, and this new language would apply to bridges that were not originally included in that program. Chapter 152 is established to address bridges classified as structurally deficient or fracture critical, and that was as of March of 2008. And then further classified these bridges into a system of tiers based on sufficiency rating and traffic volumes. But prior to that legislation in the Chapter 152 program, risk was assessed and generally inherent in our bridge repair and replacement planning process. Just a little bit about that. The Central Bridge Office provides guidance to the MnDOT districts based on age, type of construction of the bridge, condition of the bridge, structurally deficient status, and whether or not the bridge is fracture critical. Also, load restrictions, traffic volumes, and scour susceptibility, which is referring to bridge foundations being susceptible to damage or being undermined during a flood. Mm-hmm. Then the MnDOT districts takes this guidance that the State Bridge Office recommends, and then using their own experience and knowledge from their maintenance of bridges, they form and develop a program. But this bill proposes to expand the current planning process outside of Chapter 152 to include risk-based criteria for project identification. The risk-based process will produce a more understandable, transparent system that can be more easily communicated to the public. MnDOT is now in the process of retaining a consultant to develop a risk-based system for project identification that would consider both the probability of an interruption to service, such as deterioration of a bridge deck that would require us to close a lane of traffic, foundation damage due to flooding, or even a bridge getting hit by an overheight vehicle. And so we take into account that probability as well as the consequence of service interruption, which would consider traffic volumes, detour lengths, and the functional classification of the roadway. So it would be a classical risk-based system to produce a ranked list of MnDOT bridges, and that would just be one but major step in the overall planning process. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Davenberg. So this is just the next step of planning for the bridge office.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a situation where there's an identified bridge that needs replacement, if, let's say, the alternative route or the best detour also needs a bridge replacement before it could, say, handle the truck traffic, so do you look at this in kind of a sequence and say, okay, if we replace this bridge, this would be the obvious detour versus a 20-mile detour. So does that become a factor in your decision process?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, it does. In fact, when we program or plan bridge projects, certainly the look at whether or not we can provide a detour or stage traffic through the construction area is discussed. And then if it is a detour we can go with, certainly we look at the condition of the roadway as well as bridges on that detour to determine if something needs to be done on that prior to moving forward with our project.
Ms. Davenberg, the reason Senator Olsen asks is that he has a situation like that in his district where one bridge is going to be replaced and the one on the alternate route is deficient yet?
Yes.
Is that? So he's got kind of the worst case scenario going around on that bridge. So
okay. You found me out, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair remembers he's lucky he's getting that bridge replaced. I promised him that wouldn't happen until after all everything south of him got fixed, but that, you know, I got superseded. So
that's funny how that happens. The committee ready to vote here. Senator Jungbauer has moved Senate File 2847 to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, is there anybody that wants to testify in opposition of the bill on Senator Jungbauer's motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Ms. Denberg.
Thank you.
And members, we've got another long agenda on Thursday. We've got an evening, a Thursday evening meeting planned as well. We're trying to help members get their bills to deadline. So stay tuned. Okay. Committee adjourned.